This is Patrick Wannis, human behavior and relationship expert, PhD. In 2010, Jennifer Aniston said the following: women are realizing more and more that you don't have to settle. They don't have to fiddle with a man to have that child. They are realizing if it's that time in their life and they want this part, they can do it with or without that. In other words, women can have children without men. I have various clients who are teenage boys who seem to be suffering mentally, emotionally, and even socially as a result of a lack of fathership or a lack of mentorship, and who don't have a very strong connection with their father. At the same time, we see today many women who are, for one reason or another, either by choice or simply forced to raise children on their own, and of course, raising boys on their own. But what are the consequences? As stated a moment ago, I can share an example of one client who is only 13 years of age but struggles extraordinarily. Depression, isolation, loneliness, fatigue, and even at times fits of rage and anger because of a lack of a connection to his father. His father sees him only very occasionally and has very little interest when he does see him. And so the boy often acts out or lashes out. Other times he completely isolates himself. What he lacks is not just a father in the title of that word, but rather a man that will actually play the role of father. So how significant are fathers to children? And what do we need to help children to move from being a boy to moving to manhood? Aaron Huey is co-founder and president of FireMountainPrograms.com in Boulder, Colorado. Aaron has been working with children, teen, and parents for more than 18 years, and after 10 years of directing camps and empowerment programs around the world, Aaron opened up Fire Mountain because he says he wanted to work with kids and families on a deeper level. Fire Mountain Programs runs programs such as Teen Rites of Passage, the Warrior Phoenix Challenge, and numerous cries for help from parents. So there's a whole plethora of programs that Aaron Huey leads with Fire Mountain Programs. Aaron, can you begin by outlining to us some of the programs that you offer in Boulder, Colorado?
Yes, Patrick, thank you. Fire Mountain Programs was founded in 2004 as a way to increase the impact of summer programs for children and teenagers. I had noticed that summer camps had not been really fulfilling the change that was taking place in the youth. What my children were doing at summer camp were the same things that I had done at summer camp 30 years prior, and that's not enough anymore. We need to evolve and change with the youth's evolution and changing.
What is Fire Mountain?
Sure. Fire Mountain offers kids programs like Warrior Camp and the Warrior Goddess Camp, and those programs go from ages 7 to 14, and we lead rite of passage programs and teen at-risk programs for kids who are in high school. And more recently, 3 years ago, we opened a residential treatment center for teenagers ages 13 to 17 who are struggling with addiction, anger, self-mutilation, running away, and dual diagnosis symptoms, such as bipolar and other things that would lead them to seek self-medication. So, in essence, we do everything from see outpatient one-on-one clients to having a facility where children live with us for at least 4 months while their whole families get the healing that they need.
And this place is known as Fire Mountain Sober Living Home for Teens.
That's correct.
So let's talk about one of your programs, which is Rite of Passage. What is a rite of passage?
A rite of passage is a ceremony or a ritual, a celebration of the movement from childhood to adulthood. The outward child moves inner, and the inner adult awakens and begins to take over. Now, one of the important elements of a rite of passage is that it must be facilitated by responsible adults, women for the girls and men for the boys. It is a series of challenges and tests in addition to these ceremonies and rituals, that tests the child's ability to handle adult-sized things. It also offers a chance for adults to pass on the wisdom and experience of being an adult to children, so that children begin to be recognized and validated in their movement, so that there's not some ambiguous struggling and flailing around in adolescence trying to figure out what it means to be an adult or what it means to not be a child. You have someone who actually says, this is what it means, and this is how it's going to change, and this is what you have to do to become an adult. And again, all marked by ceremony and ritual.
So rite of passage is moving from one status to another. And I know you have a teen rite of passage camp, ages 13 to 17. If you're saying that, if we say rite of passage is moving from one status to another, then the boy or girl is moving from boyhood or from girlhood to manhood and womanhood?
Yeah, that's correct. All the while being monitored and guided by responsible adults from the community that this child will have connection to and connection with from that point forward.
So let's talk about the significance. Why is it important to even have a rite of passage?
Very easily, if we don't provide a rite of passage for children, they will provide one for themselves. It's something that has happened so long in our history and in so many cultures that it's something that's ingrained in us. We have to have something that tells us we're not a child anymore, something that tells our adults around us that we don't treat me like a child, stop managing my life, and start being a consultant for me. Teach me, don't protect me, prepare me. Now, with children, when we raise children, we definitely want to protect them, Patrick. When your son was young and the protection that you offered him versus the change as he became an adult, we start preparing our children. I prepare my children to live in this world, not protect them from the world. That's what you do with little kids. And at some point, the child wants you to change, and they start acting in a certain way. For example, if you're a parent and your child starts to move in their early teenagers, you notice the fracturing. You notice them starting to disconnect from your value system. You notice them begin to choose friends that don't represent your virtues. All this is the child letting you know that it's time for them to experience something outside of the family social system. That is your sign as a parent that your child is ready for an experience, a test, an adventure that's going to help define them, something that pushes their boundaries. And quite frankly, it's something that the parents cannot be involved in, but the parents trust the people who are taking the child through that adventure. That's an important piece. A mother cannot be present at the daughter's rite of passage. This is something that the daughter or the son must experience on their own and come back knowing that they have had their own experience. Perhaps the mother or the father has gone through a rite of passage, but this moment, this celebration, this validation belongs solely to the once child, now adult.
Although I defined it as moving from one status to another, it has greater significance too, because what we're saying is that a boy or girl is moving from childhood, not only into manhood, but more importantly, they're going to be included into a social group, into society, or in the case of the origins of a rite of passage, they are being included into a tribe. How does that work today?
Well, very simply, in our rite of passage programs, the children do join a tribe. They join the bear tribe. We have about 800 kids in our bear tribe. The symbology and the archetypal symbology of belonging to a tribe, a gang, a clan is so powerful and so driving. Our children, I'm actually holding a necklace right now that I found in my car that has two little bears on it. Kids who have come through our programs wear these necklaces that we provide for them at the end, the triumph, the success of their rituals and trials, with a necklace that symbolizes that their tribe is the bear tribe and there's a group of people that got their back. I've read stories about African tribes who believe that the first man was missing a tooth and that the first woman was made from the man's tooth. So that when boys go through a rite of passage, they actually get one of their adult teeth knocked out by the elders of the tribe. And so when they smile, everybody knows that they are a man. because they are missing the tooth. And when one man smiles at another man, there is a tooth missing. There is a toothless grin that they share, and they both know that both of them have been through the trials, both of them have been through a rituals. I know of another story about rite of passage where at the age of 12, the boy actually leaves the village where the mothers live, where the women live, and goes and joins the village where the men live. And the first thing he does is he drinks a cup of blood that all the men in the village have contributed to. And that is to symbolize no longer are you fed by the mother's milk. You are now nourished by the blood of your brothers. And then once the boy has drank the cup, he is taken over to a house that the men have built for him, which is to symbolize you will not have shelter with women anymore. You will be provided shelter by the men, the fathers, the elders, of which you must become one day. And that boy now grows up with men only visiting the women at appropriate times. So again, for men's rite of passage, for women's rite of passage, the concept of belonging to something greater than childhood must be present so that there can be a distinct difference in the now young adult's life. They know the difference between a child and an adult because they have made the passage. They have traveled through the gateway, and they begin to also mentor the youth to look at the people who are still children and say, you're not one of me yet. You're still one of you. One day you will be one of me. And it does create a hierarchy, and quite frankly, boys need that. But that hierarchy gives them a place in their society. When we don't have rite of passages, we don't give people place. And we say, well, you've got to make your place in the world. We haven't shown them how to do that. We haven't taught them how to define themselves. And so rites of passages are so valuable on so many levels, not just for the emotional belief system about the self, for self-identity, but also in the very deep psychological, you have changed, and we validate it. We recognize it, and we accept you as something other than where you were, what you were, who you've been. This is about who you are now, and it's different. That allows people to hit the reset button on their lives. And quite frankly, many teenagers could really, really use that opportunity.
Aaron, in what you're explaining, you're truly illustrating a lot of symbolism connected with the rite of passage, or a rite of passage. You also referred to the cutting of the hand or the drinking of the blood, and the cutting of the hand is almost like cutting off the umbilical cord between the boy and the mother, that he's leaving behind the mother and he's now moving into manhood, he's now moving to a greater affiliation, a greater bond with men. However, today many people, even listening to this conversation, would argue, well, a lot of this sounds barbaric, and if we look at history, it was English imperialism and colonialism that set out to actually not only conquer, you know, entire countries and continents, but to remove a lot of these rituals, claiming that it was barbarism or that these acts, these rites of passage were barbaric. How do you respond to that?
Well, there's two things. Number one, I laugh because we do live in such a litigious society that the idea of cutting a kid's hand or the elders, you know, having a child drink blood is legally preposterous. However, in the symbolism of rite of passage, there must be some sort of scarring. Again, we live in a litigious society. You're not going to send your children to me and I'm going to send them home scarred. But we do have to represent.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Okay. I get the point.
Yeah, we do have to represent some change in the body. That's been our biggest challenge in running rite of passage. How do we represent the change in the body safely so that everybody around them can see that this person is different? They're not a child. The best way that we have found is by kids drawing marker tattoos on each other, where they actually get to decorate each other's arms and sometimes face. And, of course, the markers are non-toxic. But everything else is for the kid anyway. And if you're going to go back into the world and represent that you've been through a change, we all know that that comes through action and not just what you say. Oh, I've been to a rite of passage. That doesn't mean anything. What means something is you begin to show the level of understanding that responsibility and freedom are the same thing, and you act accordingly. So that's the first thing, is that the barbarism, as you say, of rites of passage ceremonies can only continue in indigenous cultures that don't have a legal system that does not value that experience. And truthfully, is we have found successfully how to accomplish it without cutting people or burning people or doing anything else, knocking out people's teeth or anything like that. So none of that is present in modern-day rite of passage, but the ritual and the ceremony is. Now, the second thing that I found very, very interesting, when you talk about English colonialism and the types of movements forward where they actually conquered the indigenous cultures that were still preserving rite of passages, the big punchline is that the people who conquered it were using joining the military or becoming a soldier that was conquering these people as their rite of passage, and it's just as barbarous. You see, the symbolism will survive despite the actions. The archetypal imagery of becoming an adult will exist, whether or not we are doing it consciously, which is why I say men have to come back together to provide rites of passage for the youth of boys, or they're going to join gangs, they're going to join the military, they're going to join social clubs that use drugs, alcohol, promiscuous sex, reckless driving, running away, self-mutilation. These things will become the rite of passages if there is not a group of conscious, effective men around guiding the experience. But again, soldiers see joining the army and going through boot camp as a rite of passage. And look at how it works out. These children come into the army. And when I say children, I mean children. When you're 18, you think you're grown up. But we all know you hit your 40s and you look at an 18-year-old. My daughter's turning 18. She's barely an adult. Someone like that joining the military, being handed a gun and giving the life responsibility of taking another life, and we call that a rite of passage, it is used constantly as a rite of passage. You have a father figure, the drill sergeant, who puts you through challenge after test, after ceremony, after ritual, after hazing, until he finally accepts you as one of his kind. That is a rite of passage. There are inherent problems with using gangs and militaries and unsupervised subcultures to be your child's rite of passage, however. And that's what we see a lot in our society. We see children validating children. We see adolescents creating rite of passages for other adolescents. That's inappropriate.
Well, there are many inconsistencies, too, whereby in the West, or particularly in the U.S., at age 18 you can drive a car, you can drink alcohol, you can go to war, but you can't vote until you're 21.
Right.
Which is almost a sign or an indication that there's a belief that says you're not mentally or emotionally or cognitively evolved until you're 21, but we'll let you go and drink alcohol, drive a car, and kill someone.
Well, either that or the powers that be aren't ready to trust the youth with a vote because they know how much the youth's vote would swing the elections, and so they've put it off till later. We're going to use the youth for our own needs, but we're not going to let them decide which one of us get into office. Because if you read the research, when high schools and stuff hold mock votings for presidential elections, you see where the youth lean. There's a very, very liberal attitude among the youth, and I do believe that the politicians know that and no better than to, as you say, trust them with actual power. We're going to give them adolescent power, drinking and using drugs and shooting guns, but we're not going to give them political power because we know what they would do with that. A lot of people would not get into office if the youth had a vote.
Now, there are two other points that you raised, if we refer back for a moment to English imperialism and colonialism, and they did this in Australia too, where they wiped out a lot of the culture. They wiped out the cultural practices. They wiped out a lot of the rituals. And they even wiped out, in some cases, the entire tribes. In Australia, when the English were settling in Australia, they would actually give poison. They would give poisoned food to the Aborigines. And as far as I recall, there are no original Tasmanian Aborigines. But here's the point. today in the 21st century, we find these huge movements where we're all going back to South America, to primitive cultures, and we're talking about the significance of the medicine they used and the rituals they used and the procedures that they used. And now we find ourselves saying, well, the South Americans and the Incans and the Mayans and a lot of these subcultures had so much greater knowledge than us, whether it was about spirituality, about the direction of mankind, or about the actual healing of the body. And so we're talking about the food they ate. And of course, there's a huge trend today where we refer to superfoods. So I just want to make that reference to say that there is an interesting irony, maybe a paradox, that what we tried to once wipe out is what we're also trying to revive. Now, having said that, the other point you raised, Aaron, that is... Sorry, did you want to say something?
No, go ahead.
The other point that you raised that is highly significant relates to one of the six key human emotional needs. That's love and connection. Love and connection is about a sense of belonging. And psychological experiments have shown that as a result of a rite of passage, the boy or girl that moves into manhood or womanhood tends to feel more connected, more affiliated, and a stronger bond to the group to which they've now moved towards. So therefore, a boy moving from childhood to manhood now feels a greater sense of bond, a greater sense of affiliation to society. Why am I saying this? Because I'd like to raise this point and get your response. Today, more than ever, we see this other trend of, I want to be an individual. In fact, even the army for a while recognized that the only way they could enlist people was to talk about an army of one. Be all that you can be. It wasn't necessarily about serving the country. It wasn't necessarily about banding together. But what it was more about was be an individual. And today, whether it's through Facebook, through Twitter, through Instagram, through technology, through instant messaging, or whether it's through other expressions, we're all striving to become individuals and say, look, I'm completely different. I'm not like the rest. I'm not a sheep. I don't conform. And yet, today more than ever, we seem to be more fractured. And not only are we more fractured, but we have more cases of people either complaining of or suffering from loneliness and isolation. How do you feel, if you do, that this is connected to rites of passage?
Well, it's such a powerful paradox. Every single kid in our teen rehab, in our sober home, their number one complaint, every single kid, is isolation and loneliness. Yet their desire for individuation is also very overwhelming, especially individuation from the parents. So I think what we have here is we have a battle between nature and nurture, where our nature is that we have to belong to survive. We cannot survive alone. We can't procreate. We can't battle the saber-toothed tiger. Like if we are in our caveman state and we are alone in this world, we cannot survive. We will not survive. The saber-toothed tiger will get us. So that's the part of it. And when we look at the hierarchy of needs, the need of belonging and the need for uniqueness are both there on the hierarchy of needs. So we get to that need of uniqueness, and we want to fulfill it. We want to be different. We want to be different from our parents. We want to be different from people we don't like or we can't reconcile with emotionally. And so we act different. We dress different. We find unique music. We find and subcultures begin to reveal themselves. So as we begin to find ourselves alone, I think a very deep primal survival instinct is woken up. And so we do have to, we know we have to be a part of a tribe, because if we are alone, we cannot survive as a species. So yes, this trend of individuation has created an isolation and a fracturing. And Facebook will not cure that. Instagram and YouTube will not solve loneliness. We all know it's not real. We have to feel like in our cave, there is someone who is watching my back while I sleep.
So therefore, the nonconformists end up conforming with the nonconformists, and they form these smaller tribes, these smaller subcultures, and you'll even see the homeless people who eventually become almost like tribes. In around Venice Beach at night, you'll see the homeless people get together. They're actually forming communities of homeless people. So what you're saying is validated by what we see today, where people still will find one way or another to group together, to bond together.
Correct. And I think the big joke is that ultimately there will be a president of the anarchist club. You know, you can't be alone. You will not survive. And this lone wolf McQuaid crap that the information age is trying to promote, like one man will do it. One man will make a difference. You find me one athlete, one that did it on their own, one who didn't have a mom who drove him to the pool every day, or a dad who wasn't in the stands watching his son run, inspiring him, or an athlete who didn't have a coach, or a team. Like, find one person who became successful on their own, who didn't utilize and leverage a community. It's not there.
Yes, and obviously if you take Michael Phelps, he had a coach. He had a coach who acted almost as if his father from a very young age, I think as young as 7. Even if you look at pop culture and you look at the whole Bourne series, the Bourne Legacy, the Bourne Ultimatum, etc., what you also notice is that, yes, now you have this renegade person who has all this power and who can wipe out all these other soldiers, but he was trained by people. He didn't just grow out in the wild and become Tarzan. He was actually trained. So he's still dependent. He is the result of all of the training and programming he had. He's the result of the community in which he was raised.
Patrick, I believe you have brought up one of the most powerful masculine fantasies, which I like to call, and with men that I work with in men's groups and rites of passage, the other elders in the Bear Tribe, we're talking about the 007 factor. The idea that as a man, the idea of a perfect man is that you're a good fighter, you can hold your liquor, you're powerful with women, you're sensitive at the right times, you're insensitive at the right times. And that this double O, this lone wolf, this man who can be plunged into the middle of the wilderness and know everything, no matter where he is, whether he's in a casino or the forest of Siberia, he is at home and in control. But look at who he ultimately reports to. M is a woman. Right? In all the stories, there's a father figure who's providing him all these tools and cool cars and gadgets to help him be better. And there is a mother who's telling him which direction, which values to maintain. And their constant struggle, the 007 factor, constantly has a struggle with his father figure, who he loves very much and is very fond of and will ultimately go to for true help and support, and this mother figure who shares a different value system, and ultimately they reconcile because the job gets done, but it gets done 007's way. James Bond is this ideal man, but he is still part of an elite, unique cadre of 00 agents. So in the end, even the lone wolf, to survive, will have to find a pack.
Interesting. Now, that brings us to the next point, then, about the role that a mother and father play in the raising of a child. And today, specifically, because I began this conversation with a quote from Jennifer Aniston, who in 2010 was basically saying, look, ladies, you don't need a man. Just, you know, go have the child, find a sperm donor, have the child, because you don't really need to fiddle with that. You can raise him on your own. And today, maybe more than ever, particularly and specifically in the United States, there are more single mothers. And that's for various reasons. Some of it is economical. Some of it is because men are refusing to accept responsibility. Also because many men are displaying extraordinary behaviors of immaturity and therefore running away from their responsibility. And also because a lot of women want to raise children on their own because they're dissatisfied in their relationship. And number 5, because the courts give women custody over children much faster and much easier than they'll give custody to men. But the real question and the significance, the critical point here is, what is the effect on children? Can a mother raise a boy on her own?
You know, I am very fond of Jennifer Aniston. You might say she's my Hollywood girlfriend.
Okay.
And so with all due respect to Jennifer Aniston, I wonder what it's going to be like for her son to read that statement, that women don't need men. And what it's going to be like to grow up with a mom who believes that he is not needed. You see, that is what has happened in this world to men. The atrocities perpetuated against women by men is unforgivable, and men need to atone for what they've done without fail. And as long as we don't, there will be a clear division between the sexes and reconciliation. Every moment that men do not reconcile our crimes against women is another moment that a woman says, I don't need a man. So much so that we have banks for our sperm. You see, our sperm can become a commodity very easily, and the truth is a woman doesn't need us to own property. She doesn't need us to vote. She doesn't need us to go to war for her. She doesn't need us to have children. So what does she need a man for? Are men even necessary anymore? Are men even needed? And that question is starting to plague men because we are feeling that at a deep psychological level. That's the war against boys, is having powerful, talented women like Jennifer Aniston say, you don't need a man. You can do this on your own. And she may be right. She may not need a man, but her son does. Her daughter does. Because someone has to provide the masculine adulthood experience for children. I'm not going to blame Jennifer Aniston for the millions of men who are not showing up for their children. That is on men, and that is men's work to do. And there again, I hold every man who is not being with his children accountable. And I don't care what the excuse is. Well, my ex-wife's a total bitch. It doesn't matter. Your children suffer without you. Get your shit together and go help the children. If we're not doing it for the children, men, I'm speaking to men, if we're not doing it for the children and for the future, then I want to know what you're doing it for. Because I don't see a point in doing anything if we are not promoting the species, if we are not helping boys become powerful men. And if women don't need us, then why are we necessary? And it's up to each individual man to figure that out, and it's up to men to teach boys how to figure that out. What we are necessary for is to change the world, to invent new things, to be powerful, powerful fathers and parents. And I don't care whether you're gay or you're straight or if it's a lesbian relationship and the father is a sperm donor. It's up to the moms to find some male mentor to mentor the son, because no woman can pass on the gift of masculinity to any boy. I have a daughter and a stepson. To think that I could pass on femininity to my daughter, that I could teach her how to be a woman, is ridiculous, and it's arrogant, and it's selfish. I have to leave that job to women that I trust and believe in their value systems, and I have to be able to set my own ego and arrogance aside. And I got plenty of both, believe you me. But I have to send my, I have to send my daughter off into the wilderness with the wild women. So, I say that to Jennifer Aniston, again, with all due respect, I believe that you don't need a man, but that's not the point. The point is children do. If a woman, a full-grown woman, an adult woman, decides that she's going to do it on her own, fine. But don't let your children suffer your decisions. And I say that not just to women. I say that to men, too. And plenty of boys and plenty of girls are suffering the decisions of their fathers. It's unforgivable. There is no excuse for it. And this is where I have a tribe of men who do these rite of passages, and we hold each other accountable for our actions so that we can show boys how to hold each other accountable and be present and to be real and to be loving men with open hearts and strong spines, not only for women, not only for other men, but for children, most importantly, the children. Our evolution is going to come through rites of passage.
We also need to say at this point that none of what you are saying, and none of what I'm saying, is intended in any way to be an aspersion or a derision on single mothers or even single fathers. Rather, the intention is to say that children need to have guidance, that a boy needs guidance from a man to become a man, and a girl needs guidance from a woman to become a woman. And so many mothers, I have clients that are single mothers, that struggle to try and be everything for their child, particularly if it's a son, to try and be the mother and the father to their child, and they can't do it. And they need to understand that they can't do it.
I want to clarify my perspective just for everybody who's listening or reading this. I was raised, I've never met my biological father. He's dead. He died from liver disease, from lifelong alcoholism. When I was 8 months old, my mom introduced me to him, and he was in a bar. So I was raised by a single mom who married a man who adopted me. When my first wife and I got divorced, I was a single father with a daughter, and I married a single mom with a son. And I've been a stepfather to a young boy for 7 years. So I understand single parenting. I understand being a man, having a daughter, trying to figure things out. How do I teach her? What do I say when she asks me about Barbies? What do I say when she wants to wear this pair of shorts and this, you know, I get it. I get the struggle, and I get the fact that there's a lot of women having to run the show there without choice because the men have abandoned their children and abandoned them. I get that. I also get that being a young boy who is growing up with my biological mother and not my biological father, and being raised by a man who was a great dad. The guy did my dad was a great dad. But they both knew that when it came time for my rite of passage, that neither of them could give me that guidance. So they sent me to Japan. And while I was in Japan, I met Dr. Masaaki Hatsumi and his students, who guided me into the next stage of my life through martial arts. And I had an experience that was not something that either of my parents shared with me. It was something that belonged to me and me alone. And it started to bring me up onto the level with them. So I get it. I'm not saying everybody's doing something wrong. I'm saying we got to do better. You can be offended at what I'm saying when I say you cannot teach your son, if you're a woman, you cannot teach your son about masculinity. You can be offended by that if you'd like, but it doesn't change anything for your son. Find some man that you trust, some man in the community, a coach, a teacher, a music teacher, an older brother, something, someone who's going to help show this young boy what it means to be a man. As a man, I don't know what it means to be a woman or a single mother, but I do know what it means to be a man and a single father, and I can teach other boys that. And in our rite of passages, we have women teach the girls how to make that transition, not men. It's inappropriate.
So you also raised a very interesting point, or a critical point, which is something that I'm faced with when working with clients, single mothers, who have either teenage sons or even younger sons, preteens. What can they do to help find for these boys a mentor, a male mentor?
Well, always go back to the community aspect. If you're a single mom, find a group of single moms, a support group. Don't be alone. It won't work alone. Don't be alone. Find other women who are doing this and have found someone. Find something that your son is passionate in. Maybe he likes welding or cars. Maybe he likes football or learning how to play electric guitar. And find a male teacher for that kid. And watch for a minute. All of this process is going to take time, but watch to see if the two of them bond. And if they do bond, have a frank conversation. My wife and I have found two men who are absolutely wonderful and know everything there is to know about cars. One is a driving expert, a defensive driving teacher for the military, and the other is this self-made car mechanic who knows everything about the kind of car that our son is infatuated with. And we pay these men to spend their time with our son. Not everyone's going to going to need money to do this, but our son spends time with these men. He's not going to learn about this stuff from me, and even if he could, he needs to learn it for other men. He needs to see a bunch of men and figure out the common factor that defines manhood for himself so that he can begin to express that value and then share it with his family. That's the boy that we're looking for, is the young man who begins to share his manhood with us in the family unit. And we've noticed that as we introduce him to men outside his immediate social family, he starts to develop the man that we know is living on the inside. And he shares it with us. And it's beautiful. It's brilliant. And he's a teenage boy. He's frustrating as hell at times. But he's also becoming a man.
Now, Aaron, that leads us to the next point. And there's three more points I'd like to cover before we wrap up. And I'll just summarize them before you answer them. One is masculinity. The second is, if we don't take action towards initiation, then gangs and colleges do it on their own. And then the third is to talk a little bit more about your specific camp and how people can attend. So how do you briefly define masculinity?
Direction, strong back, open heart, present, and understanding that freedom and responsibility are the same thing. Direction, because you make a decision and you stick with it until somebody you trust as wise helps you shift that direction into a more defined experience. Strong back means you know how to stand your ground. You know how to set healthy boundaries. You know how to be firm and know how to compartmentalize things when necessary. And that's difficult for all adolescents. It's not possible for adolescents to compartmentalize emotional experiences and act based on wise action. Those two things are convoluted as a teenager, but that's something that they learn when they become a man, and it takes boys longer to learn that too. Open heart means that you really are here to give, not receive. A masculine gives his life force energy and his sexual force energy to the world. It's not about getting, it's about giving. To be a man, in my opinion, means you give to this world, and you keep giving until the last moment. You keep giving until you have nothing left, and that's when you pass on the mortal coil. It's not about how much you can get or what you can get from girls or a lover. It's not about what you can get from teachers, or it's about what you can give.
That also comes back to the basic premise that that real manhood is not about conquest, it's about service.
Right, exactly.
It's not about what you can take, it's about what you can give. In other words, not just using someone, but actually offering something, giving something, and specifically that a man offers protection.
Yes. So that's the strong back and the open heart. And presence, really showing up, really being present. And yeah, that can mean for your kids, but that also means for your teachers, for your boss, for your employer, for your parents, for your siblings, really showing up, being in the world, not trying to avoid it.
You mean not running away from responsibility?
And personal problems. I mean, men who are running away from responsibility, how many of them have fathers who abandoned them? I mean, there's a systemic nature to what's going on. You know, in Fight Club, there's a line that says, if our fathers are a symbol of God, if our fathers are an image of God and our fathers have abandoned us, we have to come to the conclusion that God does not like us. Like, this is not some new phenomenon where men are like, man, forget it. It happened to them, too. And it happened to them. And at some point, this sickness began. Men who set up franchises with kids over here and families over there and more kids over here and irresponsibility here, their contact strategy, their strategy to get contact with women in the world is askew for a reason. They're not just jerks. There's something going on mentally. And presence means you become aware of it and you show up to that and you deal with it. You fix that problem. Men are very good at fixing things, unless it's an emotional, deep hurt. So if men can learn how to fix that thing, if men can become emotionally intelligent, I think we're going to see a massive change in this world.
Another important point, Aaron, that I wanted to mention, that goes right back to the very beginning conversation. You said, if we don't give a rite of passage, if we don't have an initiation, kids will do it themselves. And so we find kids entering gangs.
But we also notice that colleges do it. The college students do it. Fraternities do it. And this seems to be more of an American phenomenon than it does in any other country that I'm aware of. And maybe that's because we don't have enough rites of passage generally in our society. And is that what is actually happening in colleges, where the initiation, the hazing, is all about moving from one status to another, being accepted, facing the challenge, overcoming the challenge, so that you then become part of the group and you feel closer, you feel more bonded, and you become more greatly affiliated with the group?
You know, if I have two images in my mind right now. I have a young man, standing out in the wilderness with elders surrounding him, being taught the wisdom of women and the world and the nature of the wilderness and what it means to work hard. And I have another image of a boy being held upside down with a keg with a bunch of other men around him screaming, "Chug, chug, chug." Both of those are ritualistic rites of passages. And I think the question is, which one do you want your son to have? And that's what I mean, that if adults are not going to provide a rite of passage for them, we are so desperate psychologically for that experience that we will create one. Other children will initiate your child. So it's going to happen. So you either have children do it or you have adults do it. As a parent, you have to decide and take action.
Well, as adults, you do it. You offer it through your rite of passage for teens, ages 13 to 17, in Boulder, Colorado. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we offer them at least once a year, and they are for kids who are either going into high school who are already in high school. It's called the Warrior Phoenix Challenge. It has nothing to do with Phoenix, the place, the location. It has everything to do with the mythical bird that rises from the ashes. And the warrior aspect is that archetypal energy of doing whatever it takes to get the job done. And there's plenty more to read about it on our website, which is firemountainprograms.com. The event takes place out in the wilderness with a group of men and women leading the youth through the rituals and ceremonies and opportunities to let go of the past and to let that child move inwards so that the child inside of us never dies, never goes away. But the adult, the contributing elder that lives inside of us awakens and begins to run the life, moves outwards. And so it's a very affordable experience, and we'd love to fill out our camp. We still do have space in it this year. And it's a really fun program. And for people who might be concerned or a little confused about the rehab, the adolescent rehab that we run here, these two events are not linked. The rite of passage is for kids and families who are ready for the rite of passage. The sober home, the youth rehab that we run, are for kids who are struggling with addictions. And we do both programs. So again, the website is firemountainprograms.com. There's another opportunity for youth this summer where we teach children how to be mentors at our little kids camp called Warrior Camp and Warrior Goddess Camp. The LTI, or the Leadership Training Intensive, is an opportunity for kids 14 and up to come and work this summer as a youth counselor and be trained by the same staff of elders who run the rite of passage in how to be mentors for youth and how to not just be a youth counselor, but really go, we really take the kids to a deeper level with a lot of sacred drama and archetypal play in our kids' warrior camp. And the youth who come and work at our kids' camps tend to go home with a lot more than just knowledge and a rite of passage experience, but also some good stuff for their resume. Both those opportunities are available this summer, we'd love to have your teenager in our programs if it looks right for you guys. So firemountainprograms.com is the way to get in touch with us.
And I guess the closing point is to understand that, as you said earlier, if you don't provide a rite of passage for your teen, he or she will find his or her own rite of passage, and usually they think it's either sex, drugs, or
rock and roll
music. Yeah, rock and roll or hip-hop or rap or whatever. Once again, thank you very much. I humbly honor, praise, and acknowledge the great work you're doing, Aaron. Thank you for being there and for sharing your talent and experience and everything that you've gone through in your life, for sharing that and using that for the betterment of children, teens, adults, and society in general. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Patrick, and I really appreciate watching you and how many lives you're affecting as well. So I appreciate being your colleague a lot, and I enjoy our talks.
Thank you. Aaron Huey is the co-founder and president of Fire Mountain Programs. That's firemountainprograms.com.